It's Tuesday, May 12th, and you're listening to the Geek News Central podcast, sponsored by GoDaddy.com. Geek News Central is a primer of the tech podcast network. Well, folks, I've had a very interesting evening trying to get the show going here tonight, and we'll talk about that here in a second, but I've got a great show lined up for you. Strap in. Here it comes.
Coming to you from a dimly lit hotel room with bad Wi-Fi and not enough power outlets, here's everyone's favorite jet-lagged geek, Todd Cochran.
Aloha and welcome to the Geek News Central podcast, coming to you as live as it can be from the great state of Texas. Yes, folks, I'm once again back in the state of Texas, and of course I've got the portable studio with me tonight with a brand new setup. And wouldn't you know it, the brand new setup bit me in the butt right from the very beginning. But we'll talk about that here a little bit, just a few moments. But of course, if you are part of our I want to welcome you back, of course, to the Geek News Central podcast, and thanks for being part of our family of listeners, and thanks for spreading the word about the show. It definitely helps, and it's much appreciated. Of course, if you're new to the show, I want to welcome you. Of course, make sure you get over to geeknewscentral.com. Check out all the great content over there. Of course, check out our archive podcasts available via the podcast link on the website. You'll definitely want to sign up for our newsletter, so you get the newsletter delivered directly to your inbox immediately following the show. The newsletter contain all the content that basically I cover tonight, and of course any items that have been sent in by listeners as well. If you have comments on today's show, you can send me comments to geeknews@gmail.com, or you can call the voicemail hotline at 619-342-7365. We've just started to get a few people coming on Ustream, and as you can see, my plan to use VidBlaster is not working out so well this evening. So we are just up with a regular Flash Media Live encoder. And partially this is the reason why I'm late getting the show going tonight. You know, I was over the weekend, I had spent a considerable amount of time getting everything ready, getting everything wired up, making sure everything was going to be good. You know, basically had it all working in my configuration where there was a single camera in the food chain. Well, I was figured, okay, I'm just going to go ahead and connect the FireWire camera up so I get the nice high-quality video. And wouldn't you know it, get out here and get everything set up tonight, and this thing is, like, not recognizing the camera. And part of it is because I had to use a PC Express card, because the laptop that I'm using doesn't have a native FireWire port. So I plugged in a PC Express card, and as soon as I plugged in the FireWire device into it, it's like, detected, gone away, detected, gone away, detected, gone away. So I'm going to have to make a trip to Fry's this coming weekend to pick up a different card, because I've done some reading on it and found out that some HP laptops have a little bit of an issue with a specific type of a PC Express card I got. And I'm going to be very frank with you. Don't buy one from Dynex. This company right here, I'm holding it up for those of you that are watching on Ustream, but this is not a great card, and it as I look at it, the $49, you can tell it was only cost $49. But I've got some challenges tonight with everything that I'm running here, largely because it's I'm running an additional computer in the mix tonight. Normally I travel with two laptops, but I was finding during the last road trip trying to do video that it just taxed the machine too heavy, so I brought a real small, it was not a netbook, but it's a small notebook that I thought was going to work out fine, and it of course added an additional PC to the mix, and you always end up with trouble. Audio recording's good, everything's good for, you know, basically having the show notes up. Going to the mode of basically using tabs, I can use my MacBook a lot more. So we're just going to work. I have to work through these video bugs over the next couple of days. You know, I had thought, well, I'm going to have just as good a quality video here on the road, basically because I could run two cameras with this VidBlaster Studio application, but it is just not cooperating right now. I've got it in a configuration mode. I got to figure out how to delete a config file because it is essentially locked up at this point and doesn't want to cooperate. So I'll get that figured out, and we'll have that up on the next show. We're just going to catch you guys up. Flew out of Honolulu Sunday evening, got in here to Dallas this afternoon. Pretty jet lagged, didn't get a lot of sleep on the airplane. Was even thinking about whether or not I was going to do a show, and here it is. It's already 10 p.m. Local, and I'm starting a podcast, and I'm thinking, oh man, and I got to get up early to meet with clients. So I got to get blast through this stuff. But we've got a number of voicemails tonight, got a number of emails that people have sent in as well. So we'll get to those at the end of the show. If you have comments on anything that I've covered tonight, you can always send the comments to +1-619-342-7365. Of course, you can send emails to geeknews@gmail.com. Those of you on Ustream, I am for some reason unable to load the chat window right now. It doesn't want to cooperate, which I'm not surprised. So if there is problems with the video tonight, you got your guess as good as mine. It seems ever since Ustream has made their updates, oh man, not good. It really hasn't been good, and I'm running a really low bit rate on the stream tonight simply because I don't have good bandwidth, and I'm pushing out again from another hotel, different chain. I'm pushing out EVDO tonight, and hopefully the stream is good enough to be able to watch it. I don't know, because I've got it only pushing it at 249 kilobits. I normally push like 480, so I'm sure the quality is going to be relatively poor when it gets done. But what else have I got going on here? Definitely we'll be going to Fry's on Saturday. Or maybe even earlier, depending on if I can't get this thing worked out here locally before the next show. But I want to again thank all of you for tuning in. And if you are again a new listener, make sure you get over to geeknewscentral.com, pick up the audio podcast. You can find that available via the podcast RSS feed on the website. You can sign up via iTunes or Zune Marketplace. Let's take care of a little business here before we get into the content tonight. And I do have content for you. I was able to dig up and wrestle around, even though it was actually kind of a slow news night, but got a nice mixture of topics for you. Hey, if you're looking for a domain name, a shared hosting account, virtual dedicated server, a secure SSL, actually essentially an SSL certificate, when you get over to GoDaddy.com, that's the place you want to go. When you get to the checkout counter with your domain name or your shared hosting account, you'll want to go ahead and take care of yourself and save some money by using one of my promo codes. You can use the promo code TODD. That'll save you 10%. Geek5 will save you 15% on orders $20 or more. Todd20 will save you 20% on a one-year shared hosting account. And that's going to save you some money big time. So thanks for GoDaddy for being a continued sponsor here, and enjoy using those codes. Well, you know, as much as I like to stay home, sometimes you have to travel. But anytime I can avoid getting on an airplane to fly to a meeting, I do, honestly. Now, it doesn't appear that, but sometimes you just have to be able to hands-on something, right? But sometimes you can do stuff via the internet, and you have a meeting online. And, you know, that's why I originally started using GoToMeeting. You know, it's to hold meetings online instead of wasting my time sitting in traffic or, you know, getting jet lag like I do. So, but, you know, GoToMeeting has become indispensable to me. GoToMeeting is a perfect sales presentation, training sessions, or product demo. It's affordable, just $49 a month, and you can hold as many meetings as you want. It includes phone and voice over IP conferencing. So I want you to sign up for GoToMeeting today and have your first meeting tomorrow. GoToMeeting is really the best deal out there, you can try it for free for 30 days, but you must visit GoToMeeting.com. GoToMeeting.com/techpodcast. That's GoToMeeting.com/techpodcast for that free 30-day trial. All right, let me go ahead and bounce out of everything, all the windows I don't need to load. And let me go ahead and make sure we've got, got everything queued up here. I think the first thing I want to talk about tonight is OpenOffice version 3.1. It's now available. The OpenOffice folks have been busy, and they've released and upgraded the comprehensive Office suite. There's some new features that include improved screen appearance, further grammar check integration, formula hints, improved sorting, and performance enhancements. So you can get it available, of course, via OpenOffice over at OpenOffice.org. And, of course, that's a free download. That's free software. Make sure that you check it out. And how many of you are OpenOffice users? How many of you guys have abandoned Microsoft Word for OpenOffice? And I know I'm running it on a few machines of my own at home, and don't run into too many interoperability issues. But and I've got someone trying to Skype me right now when I'm actually doing the show, and I'm going to have to go offline. Because I'm sorry there, Michael. I'm doing the podcast right now. So, anyway, check out OpenOffice if you haven't, and save yourself some money. Hey, Atlantis is headed for a Wednesday rendezvous with the Hubble telescope. I almost said space station, but Hubble is getting a major maintenance mission here. And so far, so good. Nothing negative is being reported from the crew. They still have to do most of their exterior checks, but NASA is pretty happy with the ascent, at least from what the cameras could see. I'm sure they're going to be going over all that video with a fine-tooth comb here over the next day or so. And, you know, there's another shuttle sitting on a pad waiting to rescue in case something catastrophic would happen. So they're, you know, it's pretty amazing. You know, you wonder what kind of inspection they have to do with the other shuttle, you know, because it's not that far away, really. And the vibration, and if you've ever been down the Cape when the shuttle takes off, it just shakes the ground. You know, there's that much force being put forth. And, you know, the other one on the pad has to be able to feel that. So I missed the launch. I was actually just getting into Dallas about the time the launch went down. Probably was picking up luggage, but I've been watching some of the reruns on NASA.gov. Well, big, big, big admittment by Sony today. Sony's CEO, Howard Stringer, has essentially said that if they had gone with open technology from the start, they feel they probably could have beaten Apple. And, you know, really, if you look at the missteps that Sony made just for so many years, it was just, you know, how many of you grew up? Come on now, let's admit it. Those of you that are of the cassette or, you know, maybe the cassette era when you were still buying cassettes before CDs came out, how many of you had a Sony Walkman with to play your cassettes? I'm sure many of you did. Sony was king. Everyone wanted a Sony Walkman, you know? Then they moved into CD technology, and then really they just blew it from their forth, you know? And they had these proprietary standards, different playing formats, you know, different all types of DRM. You know, they just... wow. I mean, it was just... mind-boggling. And, you know, no one wanted to buy any Sony portable products. No one did. Who did? I didn't. I didn't buy any Sony portable products. But change is afoot. And, you know, he said in this speech, we can't build only what we want to build. You know, duh. You know, consumers are always first, right? You know, customers are always first, but they really lost sight of that. So there is a big change afoot at Sony, and there are major changes that they're going to have to make in the company culture. And I think a lot of it has to do, believe it or not, with probably the Japanese holders of the fort in Tokyo. I'm sure that they were a lot of the problem. and thinking they knew best. And one thing about being married to a Japanese woman is that it is very hard for Japanese to admit they're wrong, and they have to find a way out, you know, to save face. They have to find a way to, you know, keep themselves from looking disgraceful. And I think what it boiled down to, I'm sorry to yawn on you here, it boiled down to is that they essentially are losing money hand over foot. So this is driving, you know, really radical changes that are going to have to be made at Sony here. So we'll see what happens with this, and we'll keep you informed. But I think it's only just a matter of time now. I bet you what we'll see is if Sony does indeed do what they say they're going to do, I think we could see major changes at Sony very, very quickly. And I think we could see some products that will maybe finally compete. I guess only time will tell, right? So we'll keep an eye peeled. Hey, over on iLounge.com, they're reporting that Apple has rejected, now this should come as a surprise to everyone, a BitTorrent control app called Drivetrain. Apple has rejected iPhone developer Mazda Digital's Drivetrain application, which is a remote control for transmission, a BitTorrent client for the Mac OS X and other platforms. So, you know, really what they weren't even doing BitTorrent over the they weren't doing BitTorrent over the phone. They were just controlling an app on their computer. They would actually do this, and Apple has basically cited concerns over copyright violations and so forth. So, hey, chat finally loaded up. Let me say hello to everyone. And if you guys would, please let me know how the stream is looking at the lower bit rates tonight. I would definitely appreciate it. Hey, a little information. You know what I really, what drives me nuts is I'm over on a website called Gizmag, and I loaded it up, read the article, then all of a sudden, one of these pop-ups come up, says, hey, subscribe to our free email newsletter. Just enter your email address in the form below. I don't want this. No, thank you. I don't want to subscribe to your newsletter. Why do you pop that up on me? But anyway, over in Gizmag, and of course, I'm an aircraft buff, and I'd love to see what's going on in DOD, you know, what Boeing is doing, what Raytheon, you know, all the different Lockheed Martin, everyone, what they're coming out with. But Boeing is taking the design. You guys remember the X-45? You ever remember seeing the X-45 that flew, that did some tests, some bomb drop tests? They are going to build a remote-controlled UAV based on the X-45C design. And really what it looks like is a stealth bomber with no pilot. And it's just much smaller, and it's got an intake up on top. This is going to be a pretty impressive aircraft, especially a UAV when they get it done. And I'd love to see how big it's actually going to be, but it's going to be an unmanned combat system, and it'll be the what they're calling the first autonomous multi-vehicle flight under the control of a single pilot. So check this out. Again, let me hear this. A multi-vehicle, in other words, multiple aircraft under the control of a single pilot. Whoa, that sounds cool. It really, really does. You know, really, flying is not a big issue. The landings and takeoffs are tough. Everything else can be pretty much autopiloted, and, you know, basically if the weather isn't bad, you essentially, you know, you put in a nav route, and the computer can follow it. You know, airplanes are very capable of flying on their own. Again, it's that landing and takeoff that's a little bit tricky. And actually, my landing into Dallas today, the pilot did a left main mount, right main mount, nose. And, you know, we're in a little commuter coming out of L.A., and my eyeballs got big because he was pretty, you know, I don't know how close the wing was to the runway, but the lady at the stewardess, I kind of looked at her, and I was kind of, I had gotten an upgrade, and she looked at me, and I was like, ooh, and she didn't say anything, but you could tell she was kind of like, wow, that was a little bit of a, and you know, it wasn't just like this dun dun, it was dunt. And you know, you could feel yourself. I could, you know, I got that see the pants moment where you're kind of like, something's not right, and then boom, you know. And there really wasn't no wind either, so I don't know what his deal was today. All right, I found this real cool thing over on doobiebrain.com, and I'd seen this all over the net on the weekend, but I wanted to share this for you. How many of you have seen a Roomba in action? Well, some guy basically shut off his lights and put a long, did a long exposure on a Roomba that was essentially driving around in a bedroom. Wait till you see this picture, because it shows the Roomba really does get over the whole room. And it's not no predefined back and forth. It's just like this whole, it's all randomness. And I don't know how in the world it figures out it has done everything it's supposed to do. But this is a pretty impressive picture. And I think the Roomba folks will be happy to see this. And they'll probably, I almost bet it will... It will end up in some in some literature. Yeah, one of the guys says any landing you can walk away from is good. Now that is very, very true. You know, having flown for 22 years in the Navy, and I have been through my fair share of landings that were rough. And of course, for those of you on the audio portion, I was reading off the chat in Ustream, and you know there was times that the winds were so bad and crosswinds. You know, sitting in a what I would consider like the port. Now port is left on the left hand side of the aircraft, looking down out the observer window in a P3. You know, I remember coming into runways before, and I actually could see the center line. Now again, you're only supposed to be able to see off the left side of the aircraft, but the aircraft was crabbing so much because of the crosswinds, I could actually see down the runway. And that makes you go, especially when you're that close to the ground. But, you know, right at the end, the airplanes have a tendency to straighten themselves. And those aren't so bad. It's those ones that are, you know, the tippy ones that make you kind of get that pucker factor going on. All right, over on TechnaBob, TechnaBob.com. Are any of you Star Trek fans? Did any of you go see the Star Trek movie? I haven't went and seen it yet. I'm going to. Just haven't had time. Was preparing for my lovely wife coming home from Japan, which she did. She got home. She's okay. My youngest son, he's home, happy to see me. We had a nice Mother's Day, had flowers, and of course they had Hawaiian leis for him when they got home. And, you know, it was really, really nice. The only thing that was bad is, you know, I had gotten everything ready with my wife's minivan. Washed it, waxed it, vacuumed it all out. It was all good. It was like stoked. But my car, on the other hand, was in bad shape. I hadn't done anything to it like I normally do. And we walk out in the morning to get in the minivan and had a flat. So I'm yelling at the kids, come on, clean my car up quick. And, you know, basically they got the, you know, the empty water bottles and the stuff out of it. And I said, okay, kids, you stay home. I'm going to go get mom, because I didn't know how much luggage she had. And I rolled up there. She kind of looks at me kind of funny. I said, don't ask. Your car has a flat. So, you know, she automatically assumed I hadn't been driving it. So when I got the tire change and she looked in it, so she, oh, it's actually clean. But getting back to this article on technobob.com, Captain Kirk's chair for the ultimate Trekkie decorator. Oh, yes. You have to check this out. It's a full mock-up of the chair. You can pick one of these up, $2,200. I think this would be awesome for if it was comfortable, which I don't know if it is. It'd be awesome to have as a podcast chair. It really would. It'd be awesome to have in my office. If it, you know, it's kind of high though. You know, if you could set it up where you could get it, you know, close to the desk, you know, and have your controls for your podcast, a mouse built into the armrest, and, you know, all the typical, just basically make it functional, you could really have fun with one of these chairs. $2,200 you can have one, and it's pretty cool. It looks, you know, there are going to be some significant Trekkie fans, they're going to be picking these up, and they're going to be modding the living heck out of these things. And you just mark my words that within a couple of months, we're going to start seeing pictures of fully functional, chairs that have been modified from the design that's being delivered. But I think you guys will get a kick out of this. And are you going to buy this? Any of you going to spend $2,200 on this? If you are, let me know. All right, little information here on Snow Leopard. And, of course, you know, many of you Mac fans, you're waiting anxiously for Snow Leopard to come out. And what have I got going on here? What is this application doing? It doesn't want me to let it move. Okay, all right, there we go. You know, when I'm in Mac, using a Mac, at times it drives me crazy because I had the browser right up against the taskbar and I'm trying to move the top taskbar. What a knucklehead I am. Okay. Over on Snow Leopard's Boot Camp, the edition of Boot Camp, they're going to include HFS Plus. And these are Windows drivers that are going to allow a utility to allow Windows to read Mac OS X HFS formatted partitions. So right now, usually when you are in Boot Camp, from Apple you can see into the Windows drives, but generally you can't see in reverse. So the Boot Camp package includes the necessary Windows drivers to support each of Mac's hardwares, and this is pretty good. This is really good that you're going to be able to do this. It's going to come standard. It says the newest version of Snow Leopard's Boot Camp appears to include all the drivers and allow read access to the Mac data. So this is big for those of you that, you know, that's been frustrating because you've had to drag stuff over. Now I use Parallels and I can get basically drag from window to window, but this is going to allow you direct access via the drive. You're not going to have to go and copy something and paste it over in. How many of you have been read the articles on Microsoft Watch over on eWeek? It is a RSS feed that I have stayed subscribed to. It's had several writers over the past couple of years, but today there was an announcement by the current writer that he's gone. He has been laid off. Joe Wilcox, this is his last week at eWeek, and they are going to be essentially reducing staff there. And the Microsoft Watch blog, I don't know who's going to be writing to it, if anybody at all, but it's his last day as an eWeek editor, and he's going to join the rank of journalists that are basically on unemployment. So I really wish that my blog and was in a position to hire a guy like Joe and say, hey, Joe, you come in and you write for Geek News Central. But, you know, I'm not ready to pay someone full salary. We got a number of bloggers that are doing a great job over at Geek News Central. They don't get paid enough as it is. And, the goal is to get get to the point where I can actually pay a salary to people to write. There's just, not enough traffic, not enough revenue from the site yet to do that. And then my only hope is it possibly could. But, this guy does great articles, great information about Microsoft. He'd be a great guy to pick up. So I'm sure he'll be blogging on his own, so we'll have to go over and subscribe to his website. And I'll keep an eye on where he's at. Actually, I'll dig his blog out and get it in my RSS feed, and I'll let you guys know as well. Hey, the Washington Post has a great article about basically about the newspaper woes, and this kind of ties back in. Now, eWeek, obviously, they've got a print edition. They also have the online edition. And print. We've talked quite a bit about print. There's a lot of worry, of course, at the press junket that they had Saturday night or something, where all the press were in, and the president comes in and does this comical monologue, which was pretty funny. He was talking about the challenges that newspapers are having right now, and basically they're basically having to reinvent themselves, and that there's going to be a lot more pain before it gets better for many of these folks, simply because we're all reading content online, and this article over on the Washington Post by Howard Kurtz, man, he sticks it to them. I mean, it is it is a very scathing article here. I mean, it's just amazing here. It says the missed opportunities were endless. For the first time in half a century, newspapers could compete against television with real-time reporting, but didn't. The Globe previous owners turned down a 1995 offer from Monster.com to put Globe classifieds online before a site became a smash hit, you know, which they didn't, and then ultimately Craigslist came on, then Huffington Post and Google News and Twitter. All this stuff was just, you know, stuff that they could have done but didn't. And, you know, people are trying to fix this, and they can't. So we'll see what happens here. Now, reading at the bottom of this article, there's a two-page article. He said, oddly enough, newspapers are reaching more people than ever before. In 1999, the Post had a circulation of 786,000, essentially limited to Washington and the suburbs. Now the print circulation is 665,000, and the Post website draws 9.4 million unique monthly visitors from around the world. Well, the problem is that 665,000 newspapers, the ones that are delivered, the only ones they're getting paid for. They're making a pittance off the, you know, the 9.4 million uniques each month. It doesn't make up for those other lost revenue sales. So, you know, if you have a local newspaper that's doing well, support them. Because, you know, I think those are going to be the newspapers that will survive. I think there's going to be much more washing out on big major newspapers. I think their time has come, and it's only a matter of time before there's a little more consolidation and you end up with fewer voices and fewer people writing on stuff. Now, you know, it's one thing, I think, for bloggers to cover local news in our local communities and to get it right. But it's quite another thing to do investigations within the community, to send people overseas to do investigation. That's still going to need big budgets, going to require big news reporting folks. And we'll see if they're up to the task and changing. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. All right, over on GigaOm, Cox is reporting, or actually GigaOm is reporting about Cox's new 50 megabits per second broadband being offered. Cox has launched its DOCSIS 3.0 based broadband service in Northern Virginia. And you lucky dogs out there, you're going to be able to get a 50 meg per second download and 5 megs upload, and it comes with what's called Power Boost. It's going to cost you $139 a month. Now, it's expensive, but for us speed junkies, $139 to get 5 megs up, I would pay that much in a heartbeat. I really would. So, you know, I think when, you know, Cox and these other groups are trying to compete with Verizon. Sadly, Verizon's not trying to compete out in my neck of the woods, so I'm basically having to wait until WiMAX or something comes online. Okay, yeah, GT, the Ustream ads are definitely not targeted for a tech audience. I agree. And wouldn't it be nice if I could just pay them, you know, a couple hundred bucks a month or $100 a month not to run ads in my stream? Don't you think it'd be much better? I think it would. I think they would make much more money, but they have this other thing over there in Ustream where they're trying to extort huge amounts of dollars for a product that is, in my opinion, very much overpriced for their white label service. All right, Google apparently was looking at buying the New York Times, and they took a very, very strong look at it, and it appears that they said, no thanks. And with the New York Times at $6.81 a share and Google at $407.98 a share, obviously Google has the cash to buy them. But, you know, they see the handwriting on the wall. They know that it's only a matter of time. All right, look, information on Wall Street Journal talking about AT&T. And this is not a positive article for AT&T. Now, while AT&T has the iPhone, and they are the, you know, everyone that wants an iPhone has to, you know, want ones that's not jailbroke, has to get a AT&T service plan. You know, AT&T is more happy to sell them to you. But who's, you know, what's happening is, are everyone's a junkie, a net junkie on their iPhones. So there's a basically a write-up here about how much data is being used and what the actual percentage of traffic is. And this is just amazing here, some information that they have released. Now, let me see if I can find the numbers here where they actually – okay, here it is. Of course, web applications are popular with iPhone customers. And a recent analysis by Alcatel of North American wireless network use during midday hour. So in other words, this is looking at midday utilization when people are working, found that web browsing was consuming 32% of data-related airtime, but 69% of the bandwidth. So again, so the web browsing was consuming 32% of data-related airtime and 69% of the bandwidth, while email only used 30% of data airtime, but only 4% of the bandwidth. Now, obviously, unless you're downloading attachments, email is generally very – it's just text, right? So very lightweight. So it says as the proportion of customers with iPhones grow – essentially, what they're finding out is AT&T's running out of network. They're putting a strain on the AT&T network, and AT&T needs to add cell towers and spend more money on the backhaul lines that connect the towers to the rest of the network. This is one of the reasons why we have not seen any real increases in speed, why people are complaining about performance, especially on AT&T. Now, on a whim here, I borrowed a buddy of mine who wasn't going to need his Verizon wireless card, because I'm trying to see how much I can, data that I can actually, how much bandwidth I can use on the road by using EVDO cards and not go over their 5 gig length. You're basically doing some tests to see how much bandwidth I push in an hour, and I'm doing performance tests against Sprint and Verizon. And right now, Sprint is kicking Verizon's butt. I mean, the speed difference here where I'm at in Dallas is huge. I'm getting 1.5 to 1.6 megs down with the Sprint card. I'm getting 350K, almost 400K up on the Verizon card, which is supposed to be a superior network. I'm getting 800K down and about 250 up max. And matter of fact, the stream tonight, for those of you on Ustream, is being pushed by a Ustream card. Now, we're not going to be doing this very often, but I'm basically doing some tests tonight to see how much bandwidth we use in an hour doing in these situations, because I'm going to be traveling a lot more. But I'm not impressed with the Verizon card at all. Now, I'd like to do a test with AT&T, but I don't have any buddies that have one of their wireless cards. So right now, in heads-to-heads competition, I'll let you know how it all goes at the end of the 2 weeks. Sprint is definitely winning, is leaps and bounds beyond where Verizon was in their speed. But you know, as far as AT&T and those of you on iPhones using their 3G network, you're killing them. And it is very interesting to see this information come up. So if you're on a different phone on the AT&T network, you may be facing some challenges in getting good data rates using a non-iPhone on AT&T. So be very careful when you're thinking about, you know, you can get an account with Verizon. Each state is different, but in Hawaii, I could sign up for an AT&T account, Sprint account, or Verizon account. If I'm unhappy with the service, long as I go back, I can cancel within 30 days. Some states are different, so make sure you check out your state rules. But you can get out of your contract in most states for a limited amount of time. You know, test them things heavily as soon as you get them to make sure that you're going to be happy with the service. Let's move on here. There's of course, we talked a little bit about the New York Times earlier, but the New York Times has released the New York Times Reader version 2. And I don't know if any of you have ever used this before. I've never used their Times Reader, and I'm going to download it and be playing with it. But everyone says that's been using this so far, they're saying bravo. Great experience getting the full story from the, you know, basically you're seeing everything on the front page, all the, you know, intermixing stuff on the inner pages, different sections. So you can download it now. You can even do the crossword puzzle on the application itself, and you can get it at timesreader.newyorktimes.com. So, excuse me, timesreader.nytimes.com. And I don't know if you have to be paying for New York Times or what, but to get this, but definitely better experience, at least from the screenshots that I've seen so far, than what we are probably going to get with the Kindle. All right, a little bit of information come out of the FTC. And this is, we'll have to see what happens here, but the administration has told the current FTC chair, essentially, to bring the hammer down on net neutrality. And to get busy on that. Now, there was a little bit of that happened with Comcast before. So we'll see what happens with this. But the FTC Trade Commission Chairman, John Lovitz, suggested that he has been given free rein to aggressively pursue a variety of online malfeasance, and that he planned on taking advantage of that. So we'll see what happens with this here. We'll see what they do, and you know, they've got a lot of stuff on their plate over there at the FCC and also the FTC. So did I say that right in the beginning? The FTC says they're going to jump in on net neutrality. And remember, the FCC – okay, this is where I got you mixed up. The FCC was the one that brought the hammer down on Comcast before for throttling and wading into the peer-to-peer stuff. And so now the FTC is going to get involved. So we'll see what happens there with that. Sorry for the confusion. You know, you got to hand it to some companies. If you got a telephone, if, you know, if you had someone come knock on your door, and just, you know, just take this for an example. This guy comes knocking door. So, Mr. Cochran, we are a internet service provider that wants to bring fiber to your neighborhood. If we can get you and 60% of the other people in your neighborhood to pre-sign up, we will bring fiber to your neighborhood. And matter of fact, we will allow you to save $400 on your installation if you will dig a trench to bury your own fiber cable coming into your property. How many of you would pre-sign up with a company that came knocking on your door saying, we're going to give you a great price, we're going to bring fiber to your home? Well, that's exactly what happened with a Norwegian ISP. They didn't start out as an ISP. They started out as a power company. And they moved from power to broadband. And for first year in business, they didn't have too many houses signed up. They had 500 customers their first year. Imagine being on a fiber network with only 500 customers. Oh, wow. Talk about speed. But now they have over 130,000, and that's part of their deal. They, unlike Verizon, where they're just doing everybody, or at least in the areas that they're rolling out, they go into neighborhoods and get people to sign up and get commitments on 60% of the people. I don't know how big of an area it has to be, but I can tell you, I'd be pounding on my neighbor's doors. Hey, you need to, like, sign up. Of course, no one in my neighborhood, probably no one would, and then I'd be getting no fiber anyway. But if you become familiar with this company, if you're a Norwegian listener, I'd love to hear your feedback if you've gotten solicited by this company called Lyse, L-Y-S-E. Okay, let me go ahead and move on here. And how many of you have ever gotten a collect call from someone that was in the Huskow, in other words, in prison? I have gotten calls from buddies to come bail them out. when they've had a little bit too much fun on the town or something and gotten a collect call. And if you've ever gotten a collect call from a prison, you'll notice that the bill is generally pretty big. It's not cheap to take a collect call from a prison. But California is considering a law that would boost the penalty for using a cell phone in in prison. Now, you know that inmates are not supposed to have cell phones, and but somehow they continue to sneak them in, so they're looking at actually putting jammers in prisons to essentially eliminate the ability of prisoners that smuggle in cell phones to use them. But, you know, a cell phone's not small. Of course, they have a pretty good, they do a pretty good job of hiding knives and everything else. I guess what, you know, what's a little cell phone? But they're finding close to 3,000 are confiscated each year. And they're going to also make a penalty for if they find someone that brings one in, and they're going to be fined up to $5,000. How can 3,000 cell phones, you know, what they take people through metal detectors and stuff when they come to visit, and how are they getting that many in? I'm telling you, someone's on a major take bringing cell phones in for prisoners. Gosh, just amazing. So they're actually thinking about putting jammers in. More discussion on time over at in their business and tech section, talking about how Apple and AT&T's 3G is starting to hurt the competition because of, you know, people getting bad vibes on the speed. It's kind of having this trickle-down effect, essentially what we talked about earlier, not having enough network capacity to support all the iPhones that are out there. All right, I know a number of you, I'm probably going to make some people angry here, and I apologize if I do, and I also understand why you may run this software, but a number of you run the AdBlock Plus. It's the plugin for Firefox. You know, I guess, you know, as a person that owns a number of websites and relies on the advertising revenue from those websites to feed my family, that it really bothers me. You know, at least let the ads load. You know, I'm not asking you to go through and click the ads, okay? I've never asked you guys to do that. But I know many of you run it just because you don't want to see the ads in any of your content. And it bothers me a little bit, and I understand your reasons for wanting to. I've never run an ad blocker on my browser because I understand the economics of running websites and fixed costs that we have on a month-to-month basis, and delivering this content is not cheap. So, you know, when people say, hey, I run ad blocker, Todd, you're, you know, stuff's getting blocked and you're not seeing your ads on your site, it, you know, it's okay. It's your right to do that. And it doesn't hurt my feelings, but at the same point, I rely on those banner ads for revenue. And, you know, obviously the majority of the revenue comes through the advertisers in this show, but still it's a component of the advertising that's on the website. But the extension maker, AdBlock Plus, on Monday, and I think this is a good proposal, he proposed a change in the software that would allow publishers, with the consent of AdBlock Plus users, to prevent their ads from being blocked. And he suggested altering his software to recognize a specific meta tag as a signal to bring up an inline dialog box noting the site's publisher's desire to prevent ad blocking. The user would then have to choose to respect that or wish or not. So in other words, I could put this meta code in the website at Geek News Central, and as you visited it, you could say, yeah, I'll allow Todd's ads to display when I'm visiting the website. You know, we don't do no fancy pop-ups. We don't do no overlays. I agree. That stuff is irritating, right? It really is. You know, so I run, unobtrusively, I run stuff over in the third column. They're there. They're not in your face. So I think the majority of you probably would say, yeah, it's okay. Let me go ahead and show these ads because, you know, I like Todd and, you know, I want him to see make revenue, even if it's off of just the views. On other sites, I know you're going to say, no way. You know, I mean, you know, PC World, you look at the – they throw this big pop-up that's in front of the whole screen when you go to the website, and it just simply drives me crazy. Even me, it drives me. But I still, I just kind of close it, and I just continue to move on. So how many of you that are using AdBlock Plus, and I'd like to hear from you via email, if you would, geeknews@gmail.com. Of course, you're always free to call the voicemail hotline at +1-619-342-7365 and leave your comments. So that if I ran that meta tag on my website, would you choose to allow the ads or not? Or would that just irritate you even more? Because everyone's going to put that on their websites. You know, let's face it. If you're running AdBlock Plus, you go to a website, some people are not going to ask. They're just going to put it on the website because they're hoping that you'll allow the ads to be seen. So would this make you stop using AdBlock Plus? Would you think this would be a fair way to allow ads on certain sites and to still deny others? What's your feelings on this? And, you know, obviously you have the final choice on whether or not you're going to be able to allow that to do that or not. But I think that's kind of a fair way to do it. I'm hoping anyway. But we'll see. I'm sure we'll have some differentiating opinions here as you guys drop me an email or call the voicemail hotline. Again, geeknews@gmail.com or +1-619-342-7365. How many of you would like, or how many of you would feel uncomfortable? Well, let's put this. Let me do a scenario for you. I guess a better way to do this. You're driving your car, and unbeknownst to you, a GPS tracking device has been put on your vehicle. No court order, no jurisdiction. You know, basically what has happened is the police suspect you of something, and they want to follow you around, and they put a GPS unit on your car without a search warrant. Do you think that's a violation of your privacy? Well, two courts now have said that it is not a violation of privacy for police to put a GPS tracking device on a suspect's car. So they've said that it's perfectly legal, though there were some concerns about, you know, some particularities, you know, driving on their private property and so forth. You know, theoretically, as they say in this article, you could get followed around by a unmarked police car without any choice. They could follow you all day long, but you also would know that you're being followed. You could turn into a private driveway, and the vehicle wouldn't be able to follow you. Meanwhile, if you're having this GPS device that's on your vehicle, again, without a court order, you know, you turn into that private driveway, it's going to know exactly where you go, right? So I don't know how I feel about this, to be honest with you. Now, obviously, if you're having a, if there's a, you know, if you're being suspected of something where they're going to put a GPS tracking device, don't you think that they should go to the court and get a, essentially a search warrant? Because if they're going to go to that length to find out what you're doing, they should have enough evidence to go to, you know, a courthouse and get a search warrant to put that on your vehicle. I would be on the side of, why are you doing that? You know, if you're going to do it, go get a search warrant, you know. And if you, you know, you can put it on there, you track the person, build a case, that's fine. But to build a case without a search warrant, really, I think that's really close to violating our rights. I really do. It makes me, even, you know, as much as I hate criminals, don't get me wrong, I'm not a fan of criminals. It's still that fundamental issue there. I don't know. What do you guys think? What do you guys think about that? And, you know, theoretically, no one in this audience is being tracked for something illegal. But just to think that you would be without a search warrant makes me go, Okay, I had an article up on my blog, and it was entitled The Value of – how did I actually put it? Let me go over here and actually look and see how I actually – entitled the article, because this is important that I get this right here. So that I wrote the article. It was entitled "The Value of What Was Written Before." Now, on Geek News Central, there's I did an inventory of all the articles. There's close to 8,000 articles have been written on Geek News Central. Not all of those by me. There's been a large number, of course, written by bloggers that are blogging on the website. But there, I would say a large percentage of them, probably 90% of the articles, have been written by me. And I have done a great deal of work to make sure that that content stays online, is backed up, is safe. My kids and my wife and my family know that if something happens to me, you know, I go get run over by a semi-truck or whatever it is, that I want that data preserved. I want it to be able, you know, at least put in a format where my kids or their kids or follow-on generations are going to be able to go back and see how bad of a writer I was. And it goes for the podcast. It goes for the video stuff. It just gives an insight of the time and the era that we're in. You just look, just think about people 100 years from now. When I'm dead and gone, people 100 years from now, if they could have access to that content, I think it'd be cool. Just from a historical purpose, be able, there's going to be so much information they're not going to be able to see it all, but you know, there'll be tidbits. And if your family members at 100 years from now come back and look at this stuff, it's going to be cool. So I've done a great lot of work to make sure that the data is safe, at least right now, to the best of my ability. And you know, I'm just a blogger and I'm a podcaster. Now, you know, if Geek News Central was erased off the face of the internet tomorrow, really there would be 1,000 others to pick up and keep going. Now, there would not be very many podcasts that would pick up and going. I'm being very modest there. But imagine, though, if you are a journalist and have earned a paycheck from some big-name firms over the years, like the International Herald Tribune, the New York Times, who have paid you salary to go out and do investigative reporting. You've written stuff on the Sudan. You've got literally thousands of articles up on the IHT and New York Times website. Now imagine if you wake up one morning and all of that data is gone. Well, there's a merger of some sorts going on between IHT and New York Times. I don't know what the full deal is, but all of the content from the IHT website, the International Herald Tribune website, is gone. And this guy's, Thomas Crampton, is found none of his articles there. In other words, can you imagine having your whole career erased? I think I would. It would be like losing a family member. I'd be sick to my stomach. You know, if Geek News Central somehow, you know, I've got backups here. But let's say something catastrophic happened and I lost the content to Geek News Central. I don't know if I'd have the will to go on. You know, it would be very difficult to start over. I mean, I just can't even fathom it. So imagine this guy's horror to have his professional life erased. Now, if I was him, they'd have to have a restraining order on me to stop from strangling the IT folks. And he's just about sick to his stomach. Now, he commented on my blog that basically, and I don't think he took the full context of what I wrote to heart, but he is going to be backing up now his personal blog, which he hadn't done up to this point. So if you have content out there that's on the net that you want saved, you better be backing it up. You better be putting it someplace safe. Every month, Geek News Central goes in a safe deposit box and gets swapped out with a hard drive. A complete backup of the website and the written word and all of the audio and video content gets put in a safety deposit box. And that's my way of doing it. This also, I have off-site storage as well. So I've covered myself two or three different ways. What are you doing? Do you care? Do you care that your future generations, you know, future grandchildren or great-great or great-great-great or great-great-great or someone 500 years from now is going to be able to have access to this content? Maybe they won't care. But then again, imagine, could you imagine, many of you do genealogy work. And you do a great deal of it. You know, you dig around in archives in Scotland. You go to Europe. You dig around and you just, you know, you go to the Mormons. You know, you dig up anything you can to find information on your, you know, where you came from, you know, the history of your family. People spend their whole lives digging this up. Well, why make those people work for all that? Give it to them in an online format. And make it in a format that years from now, the person that's digging up information on you will say, oh my God, look at this wide amount of data that is available on this individual that's a family member of ours. And people will be fascinated. You won't care, but they will. And that's my goal, is to make sure that all my content is, and obviously video formats are going to change, so there's challenges there. But, you know, I think people are going to be pretty smart, and this content's going to be able to be seen down the road. Digital-wise, if it's on tape or something, it's forget it. It's got to be digital. All right, congratulations to Grammar Girl. Her Quick and Dirty audiobook has been nominated for an Audi Award. You know, Grammar Girl, we supply her with about 95% of her advertising inventory for all of her podcasts and from us at Raw Voice. We're very proud that Grammar Girl has been nominated for this Audi Award. It's sponsored by the Audio Publishing Association, and it recognizes distinction in audiobooks and spoken word entertainment. The only awards program in the United States devoted entirely to honoring spoken word entertainment, and they drew a record 1,000 entries this year. Obviously, the Grammar Girl is backed by a great company, the same folks that do a Scientific American, or the folks behind the Grammar Girl. Basically, obviously, Ming Young does everything and hires the people that are going to doing the content, but she's got a great company behind her as well that support her. But still, this is a big award for her, and this is big. It really is for her, and I'm so happy that she was able to be nominated, and we'll see how far she makes it in this process. But big-time congratulations goes out to her. All right, that's it for the regular content tonight. We're running a little long, so let me go ahead and pop over here to my voicemails and see if I push the right button this time. The beginning of the show, I kind of jacked it up. So what I have to do while I'm playing the actual audio comment, I have to push a button to make sure it gets queued in for those of you that are listening online. So let me go ahead and... how many audio... 1, 2, 3... Did I remove... Oh, jeez. All right. Just a little bit of a technical change here, folks. I've got to... I didn't delete the ones from the previous. Okay, remove, selected, add folder. Okay, so let me go down here into promos and today's date. Okay, select that, and they load. Okay, here comes the first audio comment.
This is Matt from Indiana. Sorry, I wasn't clear on my last voicemail. The reason why we still have our landline is our home security system. It dials out to the central office so they can...
Oh, we had heard that one before, so we're going to skip that one. I thought I had erased those. Apparently, I didn't. Matt, we heard you on the last show, so let me see how many more of these I've got that we've heard before. Here's the next one.
Hey, Todd. This is Clint calling from Houston, Texas.
Hey, Clint.
Really been enjoying the podcast lately. A couple of questions about your hacked iPhone working with T-Mobile. What if you need service from the Apple Store for your warranty voided? Also, have you had any loss of functionality on, or have you actually gained functionality? Really enjoy the show. Keep it up, and aloha.
Hey, aloha, and thanks for the comment. Well, what I've lost in functionality with my iPhone is that it's a pain to upgrade, because every time you upgrade, then you have to real jailbreak it. And so, you know, I've upgraded it a few times, but I haven't upgraded it very far. But I'm still running as many apps as I have in the past. If I go to the Apple Store, warranty's voided. And plus, this one's already, 2 years old on this one already? So I don't have to worry about that. But I did lose some functionality because I haven't updated it with the new versions recently. But that's, you know, essentially my choice and pure laziness because I haven't had time to do it. Now, I wouldn't have to be suffering that because I can jailbreak it all the way up through the current version. But it was a good question to ask. All right, let me go ahead and move on and get into the next voicemail here.
Hey, Todd, it's Tom calling from Chicago again. I've got two comments for you. I'm still catching up on shows, so I haven't listened to the Friday show yet. First comment regarding salaries and paying yourself. The first rule that you've got to follow is you got to pay yourself. I mean, that's the bottom line, unless your company's bleeding like uncontrollably. But it's very important. I think maybe the venture capitalists out there are looking for established companies that perhaps are able to support some type of infrastructure as far as paying people and whatnot. Maybe that's what they're getting at. I haven't read the article, but no, you've got to pay yourself. You cannot sacrifice that. It's nuts to assume that any venture capitalist would not assume that you'd be getting paid through the money that was given to whomever would get it. So you are absolutely right. Got to pay yourself. Got to feed yourself. You sacrifice so much of your time for your business, and it's that important. So you're right in the money on that. The other comment is regarding Sprint. I'm a Sprint customer. Why can't they just lower the price? You know, when you take a look at each one of the cellular companies out there, the only thing they compete on is minutes and price. You know, I mean, that's about it. So why can't they just drop the price down? I don't know how much money they've invested in the infrastructure, but people are leaving mainly, I believe, because of it's expensive. I mean, it's expensive to have that service. So until I think they do that, I don't think they're ever going to get new customers. So, and I don't think they'll ever do that. So anyway, great show. Keep up the good work. I'm looking forward to listening to Friday's show over the weekend. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Hey, thanks for the call. And, you know, in all honesty, venture capitalists, they don't want you taking much of a salary. They want you to take slave wages is what they want you to take. They want you to be on half or quarter salary. They want you to sacrifice. They want you to use every available resource of your own. They want you hungry. They feel that companies that have taken venture funding, they don't want you to burn up your money in salary. So, yeah, they expect you to sacrifice big time, and they want you to move, too. They want you to be close to them where they can touch you and grab you and feel you and guide you and mold you. It's one of the reasons why, Raw Voice is a profitable company without venture funding. And that's all I'm going to say on that because there's all kinds of stupid SEC rules, but no, it's not a pretty thing what they ask people to do. Now, so far as Sprint goes, I don't know. I pay for all I have with them is the EVDO card, and I pay them too much money. But it's the same price as all the other competitors out there. And they've been good. And I don't have to deal with a customer service. I don't have to call for credit for minutes. It's just unlimited data plan. So, again, you know why I'm on T-Mobile is because of the price and the minutes. You're right. Why don't they? That's probably the question of the day. And, we used to have some – well, actually, we still have some people that listen to the show from Michigan that used to be involved in Sprint. They're not there anymore. But we don't have anybody from Sprint that actually works there willing to make comment on the show, either email or live recently. So I don't know. But your guess is as good as mine. Thanks for the call. And here comes the final voicemail for the evening.
Yeah, hi, Todd. This is Chris from the UK, long-time listener. Just been listening to episode 475. I was interested in the article about Virgin Media offering a very high-speed broadband service. I'd treat that with a little bit of scepticism myself, my friend. Virgin Media have a history of offering high contention ratios. So, the service that they offer is great until the school kids come home at half past 3 in the afternoon, then the whole thing just grinds to a halt. They're also very prone to throttling their network between 3:30 in the afternoon and midnight. Again, you know, they might offer good bandwidth out to your premises, but the bandwidth through their systems and out onto the internet typically is very constrained. In the past, I subscribed to one of their high-speed services, supposedly a premium service, and in the evening, you know, I was getting the same sort of speed as I would have been getting with an ADSL line from a telco. So, interesting development. I wouldn't say no if I was in the right area to get in one myself, but don't go too overboard when you read the press release. And the article at the end of your show about newspapers, no, I wouldn't pay for any online newspapers. Even, you know, if Murdoch and his cronies all go to pay, there's still going to be plenty of great content out there that you'll be able to get for free. And I certainly, it would have to be something really special for me to pay for it. So keep up the good work. My best wishes to your daughter with her pet rabbit. I've been there numerous times in the past with my daughter, so I know how that situation plays itself out. And look forward to the next show. Cheers, buddy.
Hey, thanks for the call, and thanks for the feedback on Virgin. I tell you, there's over the weekend there was some articles pretty critical of them, and basically saying this is just a big publicity campaign, and they're not serious about rolling this out. They just wanted the bragging rights to having the fastest internet service in the world for the moment, and beating the Japanese, who have the 160 megabit per second service, which is a viable real service that's out there. So thanks for your feedback on that. And yeah, the rabbit thing, it's amazing how quickly they resolve that. And that's all I can say. She's doing fine, and she had a little bit of a cry when her mom came home and she was explaining what was going on. But you know, that's what daughters do with moms. So it's everything's fine. So we're all good in the household, and we're contemplating a new bunny purchase. But of course, it has to be with the proper cage this time. Okay, I shouldn't laugh. It was pretty sad. It really was. She was pretty upset. Hey, I got a few emails to go through, and then we'll be able to finish up here on time. I got an email from Carl in Sweden. And, hey, Todd, it's Carr. Okay, he's correcting me here. It's Carr from Sweden. An update to IE compatibility list has been released, and it contains 3,137 listings among big sites like YouTube, Wikipedia, OpenOffice.org, Pandora.org, PhotoBucket.com, Skype.com, Mebo, ImageShack, HP, and it goes on. Another 30 Google domains like FRDE, SE, Row, etc. Kind of odd. I don't think this is any good for advancing the web. And if these sites can't even be compatible with what IE8 has to offer, it's really bad and dangerous and shows what a devastating effect IE has had on the web by stagnating the development. This is only release candidate 1 of the list, and will be updated with more sites as time goes on. This gives site owners a chance to further stop advancement of the web. I really hope that when Microsoft releases IE 8.5 or IE 8.9, this list is removed, so website owners are forced to update their sites to comply with web standards. How can they expect their sites to be correctly displayed if they aren't following standards? What's the problem there? Everywhere else in society, it's incredibly important to follow whatever standards are set out there, or things doesn't work. Due to HTML's forgiving structure and IE's past monopoly, we've had a huge problem today. People think that they can just throw up any kind of code and it will display correctly. This is bad. When it comes to people that have done good for the web, I have to give them huge credits. The Mozilla organization, without them, the web would probably still have been stuck at the IE5 level. Thanks to Mozilla, IE8 has made some huge advantages with IE7 and IE8, and since IE8 is the biggest player in the browser market, it is very important to have them with us, but this compatibility mode is a step back. What are your thoughts on this? Well, this compatibility thing is a pain, especially for a team that's developing and building sites. You would not believe the amount of regression testing we have to go through to make sure that the sites work in IE, work in Mozilla, work in Opera, work in Safari, and a half dozen other squabbly little browsers that different people use that if the site doesn't load, they complain and they complain and they complain and they complain. Not only that, usability to make sure the websites continue to be good for the hearing, I mean the sight impaired, and that they're optimized for the hearing impaired, so that the, you know, just everything that we can do to make sure the sites, you know, meet as many standards as possible is tough. Now the IE8 thing, you know, there's always a bug here, a bug there, and really I give credit to Angelo for really dealing with all that stuff, because, you know, as you guys know on Geek News Central for a while, if you guys didn't have JavaScript loaded up, you guys never saw the titles of the posts on the website, and it actually looked different in IE8, and it's just because it was a compatibility issue, and it's like just never looked good in IE, and that's one of the reasons why we did the update, and I made sure that the site looks good across all browsers. You know, this whole compatibility list, I wish just Microsoft would get off their high horse and meet all of the standards that are out there and follow the worldwide standards instead of going on their own. I agree with you. They're better. I have to give them a little bit of credit, but not much. Got an email from Henry. He says, just listening to episode 475 as I write this. Sorry to hear about the loss of your daughter's rabbit. And basically, he gave me a link to a little poem that he said that I could help, would use to help comfort my daughter. I provided her that link. And thanks, Henry. I appreciate that. And she did too. If I'm not going to put this in the show notes, but if anybody would like this for their kids as well, it's a nice little poem for when a kid loses a pet. And I think you guys will like it. Henry's a real animal lover, and this is a good find here, Henry. I definitely appreciate that. I got an email from DT. He said, hey, Todd, just wanted to comment a story about ripping DVDs for educational use. I think he says this, he's trying to say this sarcastically. He said, I guess the MPAA wants to get the image into children or young people's heads that pirate copying will look bad and using their recognition method will portray that. My partner are looking to buy our first house. Oh, this basically, this was the response to the MPAA suggestion that teachers use a video camera to video a flat screen for clips that they were going to use in presentations to kids for educational purposes, okay? But the second part of this is talking about he's getting ready to buy a house. He says, my partner and I are looking to buy our first house, and she wants it to be in a good location with a good size, etc., but I keep pushing for an area near our exchange, which does cause a bit of tension. Danny, good luck with that. when it comes to purchasing our home, it was yes, dear. there's not too much negotiation there when it comes to the ladies picking the house. it is definitely their choice. he goes on to say, I hope your family and family-in-law are okay. Look forward to the updates. Situation with my wife's father is not super positive. He is, since they put this stent in his neck, things have, was supposed to improve things. There was some risk, and all things that could go wrong have went wrong. And it is very, very challenging. It's a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde personality with him right now. 1 minute he's fine. The next minute he doesn't know where he's at. They don't know if it's Alzheimer's. They don't know if it's effect of this blood pressure change. Or it's very, they're very confused. And it's not good. But the main thing was, is I wanted her to be able to get home and see her father. No matter what the state was, God forbid something happens, at least she will have been there and understood the situation. He's 73, and it's a sad situation, but it's one of those things that people live out every day In every minute in this world, so many people are have aging parents that are in not great shape. I basically have always told my wife, I get to that point, you know, you just give me a drive me out to I shouldn't say this. I said, drive me out someplace by, you know, a big hill or something where I'm not going to hurt anybody, and, you know, give me the keys to the car and let me go for a spin. you know, but it's yeah, it's a tough situation. But thank you for asking. And Danny's out of the UK. Got an email from Luke. He's another listener in the UK. He said, hey, aloha, Todd. I'm listening to the last show you just had to email you. I'm a Virgin Media customer in Nottingham, UK, and heard about the story of the 200 megabit trail. I'm on a 10 megabit, but could get to 50, but I don't have the extra money for the plan at the moment. I do not live near Ash Road where the trial is supposed to happen. I'm 200 miles south, so not getting any of that yet. But I'm interested to see how BT, the other main supplier, responds to this. I do agree with you about finding a new house with the best connection. I'm trying to sell my house at the moment and have looked into areas that I would like to move to. I have looked at some nice places in villages, some lovely barn conversions, and been tempted. But then I checked for the connection speed, and as you said, as not close to town, the speed is minimum and only ADS is available, max 512K. So I've started looking at towns that have cable, Virgin Media, to make choices from there. I would like to live out in the villages, but the connection is not worth it. I see that this as my mother and father's home just on the border of Wales in a large village only 8 miles from the major town, and they only just get connection speeds at 172K. When they do get connection at busy time of the day, they're lucky to even get on. As I'm a heavy user, I download this process of 30 podcasts a week and starting to get into on-demand TV from the UK TV stations and BBC iPlayer, ITV iPlayer, Channel 4 on-demand, 5 on-demand, and so forth. Also, I'm trying a few different Linux distros, so downloading Izio files as well as the blog and read RSS reader download stuff. As yet, Virgin Media is not capping usage, but main other ADSL providers in the UK do. I believe that the caps are bad and will not use any service that has them. I will recommend to other to use non-cap services. As has been said over your side of the pond, more and more content is streaming. Streaming and caps are far from too low for normal monthly users, let alone heavy users. But I am canceled out by my parents, who have to pay £17 per month for 512K, and I pay £14 for 10 megabit, and they hardly use any bandwidth. Longtime listener from the UK. Cheers, Luke. I guess £14, I don't know what the conversion is. That's like 30 some dollars, I believe, isn't it? With two, maybe almost 40. So, someone will correct me on the conversion. I probably should Google it, but pretty normal pricing, I guess, as compared to us. But interesting seeing what you guys are happening over there. Okay, that wraps it up, folks. I'm at the end here of the content of Muddled Through, even though I had all the troubles beginning with the show. Those of you that hung out on Ustream the whole time, I definitely appreciate it. We're like way long, hour and 21 minutes. So thanks for hanging out tonight. I appreciate it. I'm going to bring the stream down here pretty quickly to get the read on how much bandwidth we use. But I've saved this. The recording will be up and available, hopefully. It doesn't look too bad. But you all take care, everyone. Have a great week. I'll be back with you on Friday from a different location. Actually, Thursday night live, hopefully in a little better condition with the video. And but you all take care. Have a great week. Again, comments to the show, geeknews@gmail.com. Voicemail hotline is 619-342-7365. And I guess aloha from the great state of Texas. Everyone take care, and we'll see you on Friday. Bye-bye.